world tomorrow. The Radio Church of God presents Herbert W. Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
Well, greetings, friends. Did you hear the big news today? It wasn't good. World news today is bad. It offers no hope. It looks worse for tomorrow, so far as the news is concerned. But what you didn't hear in newscasts today or read in the newspapers, believe it or not, there is good news for tomorrow. But it isn't appearing in today's newspapers. Very few people realize the significance, the real meaning of world events today. What we have is world revolution. New isms, new ideologies are sweeping over the world, deceiving dissatisfied and unhappy millions, willing to grab at any straw, offering them any hope whatsoever. Each of these isms, communism, Nazism, fascism, seeks to conquer and to rule the world. And so we have world chaos. We have Cold War and we have some very hot wars. This world is restless, discontented. It's unhappy and suffering. And it is being torn down to oblivion. It is destroying itself. This civilization, my friends, is dying. But there is hope. A better world, a happy, prosperous world, is coming tomorrow. Now, how can this be? Communism can't bring it. It can only bring enslavement and poverty and fear. Fascism can't bring it. And the communist and the fascist world doesn't want democracy and never will accept it, and we might as well wake up to that fact and recognize it. World statesmen and politicians do not have the answer, and they can't solve world troubles. But there is, my friends, today, a great leader who has the answer and the only answer. This man is destined to become a world leader, to set up within a few years a new world government that will put an end to all this present political and military strife and chaos, that will guarantee world peace and will bring us happiness and prosperity for all. Not very many people really know this great man, but almost everybody has heard of him, believe it or not. He has already laid before the world his whole program for a world government that will lead us into world peace, and yet very few, if any, present world leaders holding important offices of power and authority are even familiar with this program, which is as certain of achievement as the rising and the setting of tomorrow's sun. In fact, the world has already forgotten his whole program since it's been announced. You see, this great world leader presented his program to the world more than 1,900 years ago, and in just two short time cycles of 19 years each, the world rejected his program, turned a deaf ear to the good news that this great man brought, although they made a hero of the man himself. They deified him, they extolled him, made him the head of the greatest religion that has ever come to the world, believe it or not. At the same time, they rejected what he said. And that great man lives today.
The world knows. The world tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Herbert W. Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. This is Herbert W. Armstrong with tomorrow's big news. Today, the world stumbles on in chaos, but tomorrow, the world will erupt into peace. Today, the world shudders in fear of human extinction. The number one world problem right now is the problem of human survival. But I have big news for you. Humanity will survive. Tomorrow, utopia will grip this earth. That sounds incredible, I know. And yet the advance news that I'm able to report to you of tomorrow's world, incredible or not, is happily true. It is accurate, it is certain, it's the big news of a better and a happier world to come. It's about time you stop a moment and ask, where will you be and what will you be doing 10 years from now? That's only one decade. What kind of world will you live in then? What will it mean to you? We're going to take a quick but a calm look at the facts, at the conditions, the trends, and the causes in today's changing world. And then I'm going to bring you in advance a surprising, exciting report of the very change world tomorrow. I'm going to report to you what's ahead and why, and what is absolutely certain. Today's world leaders have their views and their opinions. The two most widely held are divergent views, paradoxically pointing in opposite directions. But neither is actually going to happen. Now, one is this. Many world leaders, scientists, educators expect, though they often put this thought immediately out of mind, that nuclear destruction eventually, and perhaps soon, will erase all human life from this earth. They say that the one great problem now is that of survival. World-famous scientists say that they are frankly frightened. They warn us that mankind's only hope lies in a super world government. This world government would have to control and wield all the world military power. But of course, the big nations, hostile against one another, could never agree to such a government. This widely held view of the future offers no hope, so be glad that there is a more practical hope. Now, there's the second view, widely publicized in the United States and some of the more prosperous affluent nations, and it offers a diametrically opposite picture of the immediate future. Science and technology in these few countries dangles before the public eyes a soon-coming glittering glamour world of their making. They promise a fantastic push-button dream world of leisure, luxury, and license. And they're working to produce unbelievable material devices that they claim will almost eliminate physical labor and effort. Some even go so far as to promise two or three motor cars for every family and a helicopter on every family's front lawn. The trouble with that is that most of the families in most of the countries of this world would never be...
And greetings, friends. This is Dick Armstrong speaking to you in the absence of my father, Herbert W. Armstrong, bringing you the world tomorrow. Do you know, my friends, that in Malenkov's eyes, the religious aspect of this world struggle is every bit as important as the military side? Do you know that the communists believe that their number one enemy is God and not the USA? That the communist campaign is a campaign against Christianity itself? It is significant that during World War II, it was a part of the campaign for Hitler's New World Order to change and control and rule the world economically, culturally, and religiously, every phase of civilization. And as a part of this campaign, the Nazis revised their national hymn book so that all references to the Old Testament were suppressed. Hitler had no use for the Old Testament, and he attempted to stamp it out first and then the whole Bible. But I find that even in our country, many are bewildered on that point and in doubt. Occasionally, someone will remark rather shocked why he preaches out of the Old Testament. Well, should Christians today use the Old Testament scriptures or only the New? Now, frequently we'll find a church using the slogan, "We're a New Testament church." And some have the idea that we should not use the Old Testament at all. Many have been led to believe that all that part of the Bible has been done away and should not be read or studied. So let's examine the subject. Let's not assume or take carelessly for granted. Let's study to show ourselves approved under God. Let's get all the facts without prejudice and prove what we believe. Certainly it's true that the true Church of God is a New Testament church. It certainly is under the New and not the Old Testament or Covenant. But what about those scriptures we call by the name Old Testament? Must the Christian today live by the whole Bible, Old Testament included, or should he discard that part of the Bible altogether and use only the New? I think that much of the difficulty on this point arises from a confusion of two entirely different things, both of which are called by the same name. The agreement between God and Israel made at Mount Sinai, and the Scriptures. Now, in the time of Christ, the Scriptures, which we have come to call by the name Old Testament, were known as the Law and the Prophets, or the Law, the Psalms, and the Prophets, or sometimes they were called simply the Law, for short. Often they were referred to as the Scriptures. But since the writing of that part of the Bible that we designate the New Testament, we've come to call those scriptures written before Christ the Old Testament, and those written since the New Testament. Now, we can say flatly and without fear of contradiction that the Old Covenant, that is, the agreement between God and Israel made at Mount Sinai, is done away. But most certainly the New Testament scriptures show very plainly that those scriptures that we call the Old Testament are not done away. For as we read in 1 Peter 1:25, the word of the Lord endureth forever. Do you know, my friends, that for 6 years after the crucifixion and the resurrection of Jesus Christ, and the founding of the New Testament church, that this New Testament church had and used only the Old Testament scriptures. Christ preached the gospel of the kingdom, the same gospel he commanded every minister to preach under the New Testament dispensation. And you know that he preached altogether out of the scriptures, that Hitler and apparently some Americans think today ought to be done away. And if we are to do any differently today, then we are only doing as Hitler attempted to do, starting an altogether new man-made religion of our own. I wonder if you realize that the church was built upon the writings of the Old Testament prophets as well as on the apostles. Notice Ephesians 2:19-20. Now, therefore, ye are no more strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and of the household of God, and are built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief.
Greetings, friends. This is Herman Hay, speaking to you in the absence of Mr. Armstrong. Here at the office, we constantly receive letters asking us, which is the right church? My parents, say many, belong to two different denominations, and when I grew up, I became so confused, I didn't join either. There are so many denominations today, people write us. How do I know which is the true church? Did Jesus found all these churches, I ask you? Could he be the author of all this religious confusion that we see in the world today? First, we might remember one scripture that is so often quoted in Matthew 16:18. Jesus said, I will build my church. Did he say, I will build my churches? Notice, he used it in the singular. I will build my church. But what do we find today? Actually hundreds, 300 and 400 different denominations in these United States alone. I happen to have here in front of me a book entitled The Handbook of Denominations in the United States by Mead. And you would be surprised, my friends, just how many different churches there are in these United States and how different their teachings are. How confused is the Christianity of this world? Why? How did it get this way? Jesus said in the first place, I will build my church. Has he failed? Where is his church today? We might turn also to John 16:13. What is the characteristic, one of the characteristics, of God's true church? Jesus says here in John 16:13 that he would send the Spirit of God, God's mind, his understanding into those apostles and those ministers who should follow them, and that that Spirit would guide them into all truth. He didn't say it would guide you into forming hundreds of different sects and denominations, did he? He didn't say he would guide you into these religious bundles so that you can believe what you please. But he said the Spirit of God will guide you into all truth. A matter of guidance, being led into. It does not say to preserve free from error. God guides his church into truth. And by that process of guiding and correction, we are made to become free of error. It is not that God's church from the very start has had no error in it. Those people who are in God's church come out of this world and have to unlearn a great many things. That's why Jesus had to send his Spirit to guide the church into the truth. Then it is a growing church, a church which comes to understand more and more as it comes closer to God. We noticed in Acts 1:7, that's the first chapter in the 7th verse, that Jesus told the apostles when they asked him, when will you set up the kingdom? Will you restore it at this time? And he said to them, it is not given to you to know the times or the seasons which the Father has reserved in his own hands. Notice, even the apostles in that day were not given the opportunity to know the times and the seasons which the Father had preserved in his own hands. But we read in Ephesians 4:13 that God set the ministry in the church until we all come to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of God's Son. The ministry, the apostles, were put into the church in an effort to correct the people if they wanted to be corrected. It is God's method of correcting those whom he has chosen out of this world and of bringing them into unity, not into diverse and hundreds of different denominations. The Church of God, then, is made up of people who come out of this confused world and who through the And greetings, friends. This is Roderick C. Meredith with the good news of the world tomorrow. But first, my friends, what do we find in the news of today's troubled world? We find that 65 people were hurt, injured, in an Athens riot against the United States. Over 4,000 students led a violent protest against our stand on Cyprus. The students shouted slogans, both against the United States and Britain, which ruled Cyprus as a colony. The police supported fire hoses and made a flying charge to disperse the students, but they fought back with rocks and stones snatched from the sidewalk coffee houses. 65 persons, including some policemen, were injured in a two-hour melee. These demonstrating students carried anti-United States signs, such as, "Americans, we prefer obvious enemies to friends like you." My friends, this student action followed bitter attacks in the Athens press, the Greek newspapers, against the United States' views regarding Cyprus. These people in Greece now hate the United States, and they hate Britain, as they have done for some time, because of our international stand and our international policies. Why, my friends, are the United States and Britain fast losing friendship in this world and becoming the most hated nations? Why is God permitting this to come about? We find, as Dick Armstrong and I discovered last summer in our tour in Europe, that the United States and Britain are losing friends all over this world. We are not gaining friends by our dollar diplomacy. We are not gaining bulwarks against our enemy. We are building more enemies and more hatred and more antagonism against our countries by trying to buy friends. We are following the policy of ancient Israel, which tried to buy the friendship of heathen allies instead of relying on its God. Why is this going to lead to a destruction on our nation, which your Bible prophesies? You'd better listen and find out. It's time for our people to wake up and to face reality and quit hiding their heads in the sand. Even our government officials realize the imminent doom of this nation. We find in recent newspaper headlines that now the United States has a skeleton staff, which is to be set up outside of our capital in Washington. There are units of this staff in 35 different centers, which will take over if bombs paralyze Washington. The government now plans to station permanently and as soon as possible, especially trained skeleton forces in some 35 secret headquarters outside the Capitol to take over the executive operations in the event of an emergency. They would be able to carry on essential government business. But this plan would seem to ensure against widespread confusion in government operations. However, we find that this plan would also make it possible for enemies to find and have access to our secret documents much more easily. They would no longer be centralized. They would be dispersed among many, many different agencies. The point is, my friends, our government realizes that we are in imminent danger of an all-out atomic or hydrogen attack. They're making plans to go underground. They're relying on their human power for protection against this thing that's going to come. But in view of the fact that our Secretary of the Air Force recently announced that there are now weapons available which can destroy, absolutely and totally destroy, whole continents, we had better begin to rely on a higher power for our protection. It seems that today's world is often lulled into complacency by its religious leaders, who indicate that there is a great revival just around the corner and that everything is going to be all right. They say all is well. Everything's going to work out for good. Don't you worry. We hear news quite often about these great religious revivals. I want you to look in your Bibles and see if this is true.
Well, greetings, friends. This is Garner Ted Armstrong speaking to you again in the absence of my father, Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong, and bringing you the good news of the world tomorrow. Well, if you're like most people, my friends, you're very relieved about now. You are relieved that this Christmas shopping season is finally over. I was downtown just the other day here in Pasadena, and a man in a store mentioned that same thing to me and said that he was really relieved that it was over because he was a man selling clothing goods in a store. And, you know, if you're downtown at this time of the year and you happen to look at the expressions on the people's faces as they walk by in these shopping sprees, lavishly spending millions of dollars across our nation to trade gifts back and forth among themselves, you sometimes wonder, what is the motivating thought behind the minds and the faces of these people? It isn't immediately apparent, but for some reason, they seem to be so unhappy. You don't see their faces all lit up with joy and happiness, but instead it looks like they're just angry at someone. They're all stirred up inside. They're bitter. And they're shoving each other out of the way. And they have this expression on their face of hatred for their fellow man. Well, now maybe you haven't seen the same people that I have. Maybe you live in a town where you see nothing but joy and peace and everyone getting along fine and loving one another. But if you do, my friends, you live in the most unusual town in the United States of America. Because the people that I have talked to and the people that I have seen present a very different front, a very different appearance to those who look. Well, Mr. Armstrong has been going through here in Hebrews, the 12th chapter, and showing you some of the reasons for the juvenile delinquency we have across the United States today. And asking you if you know what your children are doing on their dates and on these nights when they stay out late. Showing how the father of a young girl who thought she was the most well-mannered and most well-behaved child he had ever seen was utterly shocked to find that she, too, had been out on one of these wild teenage parties. Well, he read you the section here about chastisement and how if our parents would wake up to the fact that their children are human beings and they're not some little unbreakable psychopathic case and they don't need to be treated with kid gloves for fear they're going to break or bend or it's going to warp their character, but they ought to be treated the way God himself says they ought to be, because God made us all, you know. Well, then maybe they would find the reason. He's been going through Hebrews, the 12th chapter. I want to go back just a little bit. Here in verse 11, he read this, I believe, just yesterday. Now, no chastening for the present seems to be joyous. We don't enjoy it if we're chastised for the present, and the child doesn't enjoy it either. But grievous. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Yes, and sometimes it needs to be exercise. It needs to be physical exercise, if you please. Then he read, wherefore lift up the hands which hang down and the feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but let it rather be healed. Follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. And those are important words to remember, to follow peace with all men. At this time of the year, we have just finished now with this Christmas season, where the criterion seems to be peace on earth and goodwill toward men. At least that's what you see painted in the shop windows downtown to draw bigger crowds into the merchandise counters. Nevertheless, that peace is not a visible thing. I haven't seen it. I don't know if you have or not. Well, then verse 15. Looking diligently, lest any man fail the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. Now, do you know that perhaps there is no single word that is more misunderstood in your Bible than this word grace? What does grace mean? Well, apparently millions.
The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. Alcoholism is a worldwide problem of enormous dimensions. A nationwide problem in the United States, but a worldwide problem too. A neglected tragedy. People very, very seldom hear very much about alcoholism anymore, what with all the sensational individual information compiled by police departments, by educational institutions or private research foundations about drugs. People are alarmed today about the growing incidence of drug abuse and narcotics addiction, but they're very, very little aware of the silent killer that stalks the entirety of society, that takes the lives of thousands of people and that leaves the lives of millions in wretched heartbreak and incalculable suffering in its wake. An article in the current number of the Plain Truth magazine for October on the neglected tragedy of alcoholism explains the worldwide problem of enormous dimensions, how it wrecks families, ruins health, and how it also kills.
Here are a few of the facts revealed in this article. One, drunk drivers are responsible for about half the automobile fatalities in the United States every year. That is, that they cause over 25,000 deaths annually. That is a direct result of excessive intake of alcohol. How one in every 13 employees is an alcoholic. Losses in industry because of alcoholism have been computed at $6 billion, some claim $7 billion a year. Of course, there's no way to estimate the human loss. That is, the suffering, the heartbreak, the people who are left alive, the maimed, the injured, the childless, or the homeless, or the fatherless. Another important point discovered was that every problem drinker adversely affects an average of four other people and more than 16 friends and business associates, four in his direct family and at least 16 acquaintances and business associates in the community. Therefore, at least 130 million Americans are directly or indirectly affected by alcoholism in addition to the alcoholics themselves. And people usually think only of the Skid Row alcoholic sitting in a horrible old part of town with a bottle beside him in a complete drunken stupor, and they say, look at that poor man, there's an alcoholic. What they don't realize is that the Skid Row alcoholic represents less than 5% of the total number of them, that the other 95% are still functioning in society, that they're found high in executive positions, up the corporate ladder, that they're found functioning in homes, factories, and offices, and communities, the neighbor next door, down the street, maybe in your own home. And that sometimes they can even keep it concealed and hidden from people and can function fairly normally as long as they've got a fairly good load of alcohol to keep bolstering up the courage and the ego and to keep going on. And their closest friends might not really even eventually tumble to the fact that here is a deep disease, a deep illness or a sickness. You can call it that when it reaches those proportions, when it goes over the hill from something that is a compulsion and involuntary to something that becomes absolutely uncontrollable. It was also discovered that every third arrest of over 2 million arrests annually in the United States involves public drunkenness. How more than 95% of short-term prisoners are serving time in jail because of drunkenness or alcoholism and crimes related to it that were perpetrated while under the influence of alcohol. One in three suicides involves an alcoholic. And the blight of alcoholism ranks with heart disease. It's up there with mental illness and cancer as a national health problem. It's really called America's most destructive drug problem. It's been tied in with numerous other diseases. For instance, in a study of 341 tuberculosis patients, it was revealed that about half of them were also alcoholics. And a weakness of the physical system may directly result in contracting another disease, but it all began with a bottle, which simply makes a person's resistances so much lower that other diseases could be put down as causal in a death, for instance, pneumonia, or something of this nature, when in truth the person got that horrible cold and the eventual pneumonia because of alcoholism and exposure while dead drunk and then simply didn't have the metabolism to withstand the disease. But why? What causes it? That's the question. We know what some of the churches say. We know what some of the religious issues are. Why, even looking at a bottle of booze is one of the worst sins you can imagine in some people's mind's eye or some people's points of view, especially in religious organizations. But what really caused it? There's a beautiful record that has been in some radio stations. Maybe you've heard it by now. I obtained a copy first from a radio station over in Little Rock, Arkansas, KAAY. It's on the Moest label, Tom Clay's What the World Needs Now is Love. I'd like you to hear it. And take a look at some of the film that we've put behind these sound effects. To me, this really has an impact.
What is segregation?
I don't know what segregation is.
What is bigotry?
I don't know what bigotry is.
What does hatred mean?
I don't know what it is.
What is prejudice?
I think it's when somebody's sick.
Rise and shine, boys!
1, 2, 3, 4! 1, 2, 3, 4!
Let's get it. I believe.
I don't know, but I believe.
I'll be on my Christmas.